From Washington, this is the MacroCast with Hamilton Place Strategies and Market Policy Partners.
Good morning. It's Friday, September 23rd. You're listening to the MacroCast brought to you by Hamilton Place Strategies and Market Policy Partners. I'm Tony Fratto with Hamilton Place Strategies. We have John Fagan and Brendan Walsh, our partners at Market Policy Partners, with us this morning. We have John Dick, as he frequently is, John from Civic Science, with some great insights on how consumers are doing and thinking about things. And we're lucky to have our great friend, my former colleague, John Fagan's former colleague, Mark Sobel, with us this morning from OMFIF, the official monetary and financial institutions forum, and our friend from the Treasury Department for many, many years. Mark, with so much going on in with central banks and currencies and markets, we're going to get into that. But where I want to start today, actually, is, because there's so much turmoil in the markets this morning, so much intrigue is what's going on with the levers of policy making, especially monetary policy making. But I want to talk a little bit about a little real economy talk with John, John Dick, about just, where we think consumers are right now, because we're spending all of our time talking about financial economy. And I want to talk a little bit about, how they're seeing the world right now, because ultimately that's where rubber's hitting road with the consumer. John, good morning. What are most American consumers waking up this morning thinking, hey, what's going on with the world economy right now, or what are they doing?
Well, I mean, if you're in Pittsburgh, that's certainly not what you're waking up this morning worrying about. You're
true.
Yeah, depressed after a football game. But I mean, it's weird. I come to this podcast. I generally learn more than I add from you guys because I'm not an economics expert. But in this particular case, it's like two different worlds. Like the consumer's not feeling the stuff that everyone, that the markets seem to be feeling and saying, so much so that I worry that are the markets going to talk the consumer into being more concerned than they're expressing at the particular moment, right? I mean, the consumer doesn't wake up and think about the value of the dollar. The consumer doesn't wake up and think about what's happening in the UK. The consumer right now is certainly significantly more positive about the economy than they were in June and early July.
Yeah.
Optimism is still pretty high about the optimism is pretty high about the wages. We're seeing an uptick in a slight uptick, but people planning to do like home improvement projects over the next 12 months across, maybe that's partly a sort of flip side of a view of the housing market a bit is like, yeah, I'm going to remodel my bathroom. I'm going to remodel my kitchen
instead of going out and looking for a new home.
Yeah. But they have the optionality to do that. Material costs have certainly fallen into to do home improvement projects. There's the bifurcation between the haves and the have nots in the economy. And there's definitely a couple different stories there. If you look at like rising credit card usage among sort of the lower third of the income spectrum, that's very real. But the aggregate sort of consumer sentiment is pretty steady right now to positive. We're still, optimistic that it's going to be a strong holiday retail season. It will be up in dollars, down in units. So people will buy fewer things because they're more expensive, but they'll spend, similar to probably a few percentage points higher overall consumer retail spend. So there's just kind of the reality of how gas prices, ticked up just a little bit, but people feel a lot better about that. They can feel inflation seems to have calmed. So we've kind of reached maybe what the peak impact of that on the consumer. Back to school spending was buoyant. Whatever the markets are seeing and feeling and fearing, not yet kind of made its way into the psyche of the consumer. I worry that it might just talk the consumer into being more pessimistic than they otherwise kind of naturally feel.
John, one question I have for you on that is, the consumers, people were really angry. I mean, more angry, I think, than anyone even anticipated they would be with the spike in inflation and still elevated inflation. And I assume that I take your point, and I feel it also, and hear it that feeling a little bit better over the of some of the components of inflation that have that have slowed for them in their lives. Are they as angry about the spike in interest rates, or are you hearing anything like that where there's sort of a visceral anger over elevated interest rates?
No. Yeah. I mean, because again, that's just something that the consumer doesn't typically feel in the day to day, right? Ask me after Christmas when credit card bills land and they, maybe they feel interest rates there. But look, a lot of major purchases that consumers wanted to make in the COVID era, that could have been a remodel of their house or a new house or other sort of large finance sort of things they may have purchased while they were kind of locked in their homes, they already did those things, right? Yeah. They're not clamoring. I mean, even if you just look at like comps at stores like Best Buy and Home Depot and Lowe's, right? A lot of those like large, major purchase things are already in the rearview mirror for the consumer. So no, they don't get concerned, yeah, fired up about interest rates.
I think this is a really important point, because when gas prices spiked, when Russia invaded Ukraine, that's when the inflation story got going. We had fairly broad based inflation, higher numbers, used cars, things like that. But that wasn't really a story, on CNN and Fox News. It really happened once gas prices went up, and then the headline rate went up a lot. And that's when the Fed started getting freaked out about inflation. But your data shows that from a political perspective, the consumer was mad. From a day-to-day perspective, it didn't really change their behavior at all. And also, when we look at all the forward-looking, the inflation expectations, the consumer expects inflation to come down dramatically, very in short period of time. The Fed used to care about inflation expectations. Now they seem to only care about a backward-looking CPI number. So your data is really interesting, that the consumer is still strong, but it's also showing that inflation wasn't as big of a deal as people are making it out to be, maybe.
Well, no, because, think about, again, let's go even further back to how much household spending capacity built up over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
They are just resilient, because even right now, I'm looking at a chart on my screen right now, 2/3 of U.S. adults still say that they are equal to and or better off financially than they were before, right? Two-thirds, right? So we there's the third, of course, that are not and are feeling the crunch, and they tend to be in the lower sort of third of the income spectrum, obviously, but there's still this significant majority of U.S. consumers that aren't feeling worse off, and yeah, they're able to weather that inflation. There's also I again not being an economist myself, I know there's this sort of like target objective of like 2% inflation, and we're told that that's the number that we're supposed to aim for.
And why is that the number?
Right. Well, but if I'm a consumer, like what I ultimately care about is inflation outpacing wage growth.
Yeah. That's
right? So I don't care if there's 5% inflation, but 6% wage growth, that's a net win for the average consumer.
It's a really important point.
Yeah. Right. And that's the actual practical calculation a consumer makes.
Yeah, and to back up your with more data, so the big bank CEOs were down here. The big banks are sitting on $1 trillion in excess deposits right now. So while rates have spiked, your savings and checking rate hasn't gone up at all. And they've learned from previous times, 06, 07. They're not massively expanding their loans because their outlook is it's not necessarily dour, but they're being as cautious as anybody else. So the consumer does have the excess savings that is being shown up in the data.
Every 2 weeks, HPS measures U.S. adults' feelings and expectations toward the economy. The Civic Science Economic Sentiment Index, powered by HPS, accurately measures movements in overall national economic sentiment and provides a more sophisticated alternative to existing economic sentiment indices. To learn more, contact us at hamiltonplacestrategies.com.
Okay, so that's, but yet we wake up this morning and markets are in turmoil. We've had a, pretty significant, some pretty significant downward breaks in equity markets. Bond markets are.
Yeah, and who cares crazy. About equity markets? What matters is the FX market and the bond market.
Yeah, and so then
the bond market is broken right now.
So that's how I that's kind of what I want to get at, and welcome Mark into this discussion also, because I don't know another time where I have seen more central banks and financial or economic policy officials around the world who are responding to the call to just to do something, right? things are broken, go do something. And everybody's doing something, sometimes in really contradictory ways. Everyone is trying to deal with, the sort of connected original sins of, real monetary policy, looseness too long, fiscal support, in pretty massive ways, and breaking of real severe disruptions in supply on the supply side of the economy in lots of different ways, whether it's China or energy, and then shifts in the structure of the economies as well. So it's I can't think of a more challenging time to be an economic policymaker right now. But Mark, central banks are trying to deal with one part of it. They can't do much on the supply side, and they can't do much about people shifting their work life and consumption tastes, but they can try to do something about wresting control of inflation. And they're all on top of it with pretty significant policy moves. And we saw a little bit more of that commitment from the Fed this past week.
Well, you're absolutely right. Central banks are, particularly the U.S. and Europe, are focused very heavily on high inflation, and they're going to wring it out, and they're making no bones about it. But they're doing so in unprecedented times. Europe's doing it against the background of questions about energy supplies, this Russia-Ukraine war. I think Europe's situation is different than the U.S. It's kind of a supply-side oil, energy market-driven inflation. I think in the U.S. there's a demand and a supply-side component. Central banks can better tackle demand side. But obviously, part of the game is bringing supply and demand back into a bounce. So I think that's the strategy. Emerging markets, the better behaved ones have raised rates preemptively to limit currency depreciation. So you've got huge upward tightening, less so in Asia. I mean, we'll get to Japan. China obviously is softer. They've been cutting. So in the North Atlantic space and the emerging market space, rates are going up. Central banks are focused on inflation, and they're not going to be dissuaded. It's a very hawkish era, and that's the way it is. And I think until we see some downshifting in the outlook in the U.S., I think Europe's downshifting will come earlier, but they're talking a tough game. We're not going to see a fundamental change in markets.
One of the consequences of the U.S.'s commitment to taking on inflation has been the strong, the dollar getting to be strong, very strong. I heard somebody on TV today talking about the need for another Plaza Accord. You weren't there for the Plaza Accord, were you, Mark? You weren't actually in the room, were you? No.
I'm old, but not that old.
Okay. I heard someone call for another Plaza Accord. That's not going to happen. But are you? Do you have concerns about the sustained strength of the dollar?
So the dollar's on a tear, and we know why. The Fed has pivoted very sharply. Mm-hmm. We're energy independent, right? We have a more dynamic economy than many others. Europe faces a deep recession. It's got these energy woes and whatnot, and inflation is high there as well. They've been tightening, but the outlook for tightening in Europe is not as heady as in the U.S. Japan is pursuing yield curve control and running a very accommodative policy. So we know what the fundamental backdrop is. This is why the dollar is strong. And then every time the markets are in a risk-off mode, it further buttresses the dollar. The dollar strength reinforces the anti-inflationary impulse that the Fed wants to impart to the economy. It tightens financial conditions, which the Fed wants. So you asked, am I worried about it? Again, the fundamentals, we understand. I don't think the markets in general, you can say in general, are disorderly in any mm-hmm. way, shape, or form. The business is getting done. I would say that there are a few times in my career where I saw just conditions that got a bit funky. How's that for a scientific term? Funky.
Yeah.
So the dollar in 1978 on a down path, the dollar heading up to early 85.
Yeah.
Plaza came later in the year. Dollar was already sinking by then. But
the
euro in 2000. So there may have been fundamental, there was a good fundamental backdrop, but markets can get, again, a bit funky, and that can become a constraint on policy options. So you think about 2008, when the Fed had been cutting faster than everybody else, and the dollar is shooting up to 1.6, you were at the White House then, but even you probably heard about it. There was a lot of concern about that. And you know, if the Fed had wanted to be in a cutting mode and the whole world is screaming at the Fed because the dollar is sinking, it could become a constraint.
Yeah.
So again, I think there are times when the markets get quite funky. You know, I think it's something that a policymaker would have to definitely think about. And then just to flag one other thing, you know, obviously the dollar and the relatively better performance of the U.S. real economy suggests that the current account deficit in the U.S. is going up, right? I think it was 4% for the second quarter. Again, we can easily finance it, but when we see sharp currency moves or a highly valued dollar, even if it's because of U.S. policy, with a lag, we can get into a world of protectionist pressures. Now, I'm not worried about that today, but could it happen in a few years? Yes, and that's just something that I think about.
Well, maybe Mark, give us a little insight into, you know, working at the Treasury. So if you were still at the Treasury, what would you be doing today? You know, what's going on at, not necessarily like today, but in times of, as you said, you know, when things get funky, like how does the Treasury monitor and manage and decide when and if to respond?
You know, Mr. Fagan was an expert in
monetary. That's what I'm saying. Not just you, but the three of you.
You know, I would call up Mr. Fagan and say, "What the hell's going on?" And
this is actually a great. That's exactly what would have happened. A call would have gone down to the market room, and John Fagan would have picked it up and said, a lot of people would have been asking, John, what the hell is going on? John, yeah, what would you have said?
Yeah, I think the answer I would have given this morning is things are turning disorderly in the UK. And, you know, this is a 50 basis point move in the 5-year gilt yield. This is obviously self-inflicted to some degree because of the new government coming in and taking some very aggressive fiscal moves. It's the largest tax cut since 1972, according to the headlines and so forth, in the face of obviously elevated inflation and already large budget commitments on this energy and heating price cap that incoming or new Prime Minister Truss announced on her third day in office. This is the pound is now plumbing the depths that it hasn't seen since, you know, the 80s attack on the Bank of England by George Soros. This is, you know, these are on the edge of the kind of, if not into the range of kind of policy, I mean, market moves that should require or at least should focus policymakers on a coordinated response. The coordinated response that would normally, be undertaken is a statements. I think you start out with statements about, you know, we're watching this closely and that sort of thing. But policymakers don't seem to be particularly coordinated. This week, you know, we saw the Federal Reserve taking a much more aggressive line. We had the Bank of England, Swiss National Bank, and Norway's Central Bank all coming in on the dovish side of consensus in their decisions this week and messaging things, it's saying, you know, we're not done tightening, but we're doing so in a more deliberate fashion. We're cognizant of the growth risks. The message from the Fed, though, was... You actually had Turkey cut rates. Yeah. The message from the Fed, though, was more, I think, less balanced than the July meeting. And this is from... between July and now, growth indicators and obviously, you know, there are pockets of resilience and the consumer is resilient. But overall, you have to say that between the July meeting and now, growth indicators in the U.S. have gotten worse, PMIs and so forth. The housing.
Yeah, we got a bunch of PMIs today and they're all in contractionary territory.
And inflation has gone in the right direction. If you're looking at expectations, you're looking at tips break evens, you're also looking at the data. Yeah, the CPI for August wasn't where we wanted it to be, but it was still going in the right direction.
Yeah. And a huge component of that was the shelter component, the rent component. And we have real-time data on that. The way that the BLS does it is with the six-month average. Redfin just reported that rents are coming down, but we're making monetary policy decisions on what is now very, very backward-looking data.
Yeah, and so the Fed was more hawkish now than it was in July.
Yeah, especially the way he closed.
Not only have
we have to inflict some pain, you know.
Yeah, not only have they've been, you know, succeeding actually in making progress in the U.S., but also conditions overseas, as we've discussed, are now verging on the extreme and the disorder.
I accidentally clicked on when they reported. I clicked on September of 2021 outlook rather than 2022, and then they thought that they would top out at 75 basis points, and at that meeting, Powell was talking about how when he drives into work, he sees the homeless encampments and we have to help everybody. It's amazing. I mean, literally in March, we were still buying MBS and treasuries to stimulate the economy.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much has changed in the last 6 months.
And I think just the last point that I would make this week is, you know, the Wall Street Journal reporter who Timmerose, yeah,
who's
widely considered to be the Fed's kind of background mouthpiece, tweeted after the meeting, you know, this time markets understood quite clearly what the Federal Reserve meant. Inflation is too high and it will likely take a recession to get it down. What is that? The market has been pricing in a recession for months.
The equity market thought they would cut and pivot because its growth is so bad, and we're looking forward. The FX market and the Treasury market have been pricing in massive rate hikes and recession for months now.
Yeah, I mean, what the markets are now pricing in is a policy blunder. Where the Fed drives us not into a recession, but into a deep recession.
Yeah.
The yield curve is now more inverted
than it's been since the early 80s. And the dollar, and the Fed is the central banker to the world, and it's pushing the Japanese,
and they're ignoring
it, intervening.
Yeah.
The pound is falling out of bed. The euro is down at new multi-decade lows. The renminbi is under pressure.
And these are the big economies. I mean, just the Mark, what's the risk of an emerging market currency crisis?
I mean, to answer that specific question, I feel you need to. I think that we're too prone to talk about emerging markets in one fell swoop.
Yeah,
I think we really need to differentiate amongst them. I think that there are a lot of cases where, you know, the performance is not great, you know, be it Turkey or Argentina or Pakistan or Sri Lanka, you just know. And there should be no surprise to anybody in the market if bad things happen.
Yeah.
And then there
was Ecuador that is the Bitcoin country now.
And Pakistan seeking debt relief this morning.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah. I mean, I think when you look at a lot of the Southeast Asians, you know, you see reasonable current account positions.
The Malaysia.
You see floating currencies. They have local currency denominated debt. Their fundamentals are better. They have big reserves. I mean, even a country like Brazil, which has huge fiscal problems, has huge reserves. India is a fairly somewhat inward looking economy. So in terms of the major emerging markets, I think it's hard for me to see major crises, but yeah, they're tightening keep their currencies from falling too far.
And your point too is whether you're floating or whether you're pegged is a huge differentiation.
Yeah.
Mark, you had run through a few of the reasons why, but it's still, again, it's one of those times where, you know, whatever is going on in the world and however bad you think things are in, even the U.S. economy or elsewhere, that it ends up being, still lucky to be in the United States, right? I mean, it turns out with the strengths here that this market has are really kind of amazing, and the sort of, you know, we could actually see through to whatever turmoil to, United States still coming out in a pretty good place, and certainly relative to the other major economies in the world.
Well, I quibble with one thing that you said, Tony, which is that it's good to be here because with the dollar's strength, I think I should be in Europe.
I was just there. I was just there, and it was. And I'll tell you, it was really kind of amazing. It was great to just not to have to do math. Also,
it's one to one though.
Yeah, parity everywhere was kind of great. And I was just thinking this morning is that, you know, how can I need cash? You know, just need to get to cash, right? Because there are a lot of great opportunities there.
But more generally, I think you're right. As I said, the U.S. economy is more dynamic, and we're energy independent, and we're not sitting on the border with Russia and Ukraine. So we have a lot of built-in advantages, and we're pretty lucky.
And that large, just a large internal economy that John was talking about earlier, that we're truly, you know, if you go, I will tell you, because I was just there, you know, and generally it's the case. The discussions among ordinary citizens about what's going on in the world and how global events impact their lives is a very regular thing when you're in Europe. I mean, it is, whether you're in Italy, Germany, France, UK, wherever you are, you're having conversations about big things going on in the world that are impacting your lives. That is not happening with ordinary citizens in the United States today. And most of them are just going on, moving about the country and living their lives and doing things. They're buttressed by certain things that they, whether it's inflation or interest rates, but for the most part, these are not things that enter their consciousness.
Not at all.
Yeah, sorry, John. That was an invitation to John.
Yeah, I know. We struggled with this the last time when you weren't here, Tony, because Matt couldn't just refer to us by our last names. It's just, I'm sitting here listening to you guys through this, which, like, it's just such a disconnect between what we see consumers worrying about, how they're behaving. I mean, yeah, of course they're concerned about inflation and they're concerned about gas prices and all that, but it's just like, you look at the markets and it's like all this disarray and the consumer just isn't feeling that right now. I mean, even the political environment, it's like, if you 6 months ago, if you said that there was some chance that we'd see, you know, party continuity in both chambers of the legislature, I would have told you you were crazy. And it's looking more and more like that's the case. Like, I know there's other factors there than the economy weighing in on that. But yeah, the I don't know. There's like two different worlds happening right now. It's remarkable.
Well, we're going to have, I know Jay Powell and Lil Brainerd are both out talking today, I think. And I don't, no one should expect anything new from them. Except, I mean, maybe they'll have some comment on how markets are performing, but I expect that they will just be reinforcing the messages of the past few weeks on inflation.
But I would love to ask, just because you guys have so much more history at this stuff, I mean, when you look at consumer sentiment, economic sentiment over, you know, now decades of information of you know, history of what we have here, does, you know, what's the tail and what's the dog? I mean, do consumers get talked into negative confidence because of the, you know, look, the average consumer is not reading, you know, they don't have a Bloomberg terminal at their house, right? They're not listening to podcasts like this, right? It's like, so, I mean, maybe
they go to work, and as long as that work keeps paying them, they're going to behave the same as yesterday, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, there's also just the, you know, monetary policy works with a lag, right? I mean, that's the way it goes. We're going to see the impact of this tightening next year. And so, you know, there is the element, there are lots of data points that are like Wile E. Coyote. They run off the cliff and their legs keep going. And only later when they look down, they start to.
Though the housing market is not one of those. The housing market's
in free fall. People are obviously like getting a sense of, you know, their 401ks have been heavily impacted this year. I just want to test, the strong dollar is very good for us because it can, you know, it is part of the anti-inflation approach for the Fed. But with the dollar absolutely like mopping the floor with its peers and price action looking increasingly challenging, we've got, you know, UK and Europe and the renminbi really teetering on the brink here. Mark, do you think that this is now the time where Treasury Secretary Yellen might get out there and start to talk about the dollar? And basically say, we are monitoring what look like, you know, mirroring some of the rhetoric we've heard from the Japanese when they intervened this week. You know, we're monitoring excessive moves in the currency market.
You know, if you'd asked me this question yesterday, it would have been easier to say no. And that's why, in a way, I was asking you earlier, you know, what's going on in the markets today? Is this just a risk off because of the UK?
To answer
your question, the reason I cited these kind of events, 78 and kind of the 84, 85, early 85, the 2000 euro, is that I do think that there are times where policymakers, U.S. policymakers can't just say, you know, oh, we have a strong dollar or we have a market determined dollar. Leave me alone. I don't want to talk about the dollar. And they're going to have to think about it. When I looked at the markets this morning, I would say for the first time, I thought to myself, well, they should be putting on their thinking caps about some of the options. I'm not saying they should say something. And it's also harder for a Secretary of the Treasury to say something when the dollar is super strong, because you don't want to be seen talking down the dollar, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's right. But I think that in this current circumstance, my advice would be get the speech written. You know, get your fallback positions. Come up with some triggers. If you see continued disorderly price action in or an acceleration, you better be ready to get out there and start jawboning and talking about how the dollar is, you know, we're essentially talking it down. They better be ready to do that.
I think we're saying the same thing. I think you're saying it a little bit more forcefully than I am. I would say I'd be probably be preparing the options, but I'm not sure I would be deploying them today, but you might be deploying them today. But again, with the IMF World Bank annual meetings coming up, everybody's going to be in town. And, you know,
oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
And, yeah. Really good.
That is really important.
Yeah. With the market, if the markets, I mean, continue in this way, I'm sure that this is going to be a front and center discussion.
There's got to be some better coordination. It just seems like we're in a position where we need it now.
Yeah, I mean, we have the World Bank.
Let's put a caveat by that, John, because I understand what you're saying. Central banks have different mandates. Their economic circumstances of their countries are different. To throw your point back in your face, let me ask you a question, John.
Fire away.
What would you do if you were the Fed differently?
I think that I would have basically had the same messaging that I had in July.
Yeah.
I think that it's what they shouldn't be afraid of. What the Fed seems terrified that the equity market's going to rally. And, you know,
that, I 100% agree.
As they go from 75 to 50, they're terrified that the markets are going to get excited about that in some way, shape, or form, and somehow thwart their inflation fighting efforts. They shouldn't be worried about that.
Is going to make fun of them.
Yeah, they should deal with the facts as they are, which is, you know, they're making progress on inflation. Other central banks are saying that. Norway, Australia. I mean, these are all central banks that are essentially dealing with very similar kinds of issues, more acute, as you said, in the EU and UK.
Yeah, Switzerland, but too. Yeah.
There's a point where you have to moderate. You have to modulate, right, properly. You've got to, you know, you can't just run headlong into a wall. And I think that their messaging is it right now needs to be more balanced, which is because this where they are right now sounds a little out of touch.
And it has nothing to markets are one thing, but also the data supports that view, too. You have a huge amount of evidence, real time data that major components of inflation have fallen off a cliff in the last 4 months. And they're not looking at any of that.
That you're talking about headline, though, not necessarily core.
Yeah.
No. I don't even care about gas prices. I'm talking about used car prices. I'm talking about chicken wings. I'm talking
shipping.
About
shipping. But look, it's a part. Jason Furman has been making this point that these are all pretty good signals, but the wage component is still pretty, you know, pretty powerful and elevated. I suspect they're going to see a whole lot more evidence than what they've seen so far.
But you don't have to hike 75 basis points at every meeting.
It's not a deep
recession.
Yeah, we're not saying that you're supposed to cut rates and do QE. It's that you don't have to go all in and promise 125 basis points more. And when you just did 75, you know,
do you believe 75 is on the book is likely at the next meeting?
I think the data is going to weaken enough that they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't. And I actually think that there will be significant relief if
we have another fairly large gap. So they're going to get three more major data points in that time frame.
Yeah. But I do not believe 75 is likely in the next meeting. I actually think that if they, you know, it's like 50 is going to feel like a relief move.
Yeah, they're going to have a dovish hike. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, there's a debate going on right now about whether it's going to be 100 or 125 basis points over the rest of the year and whatnot. So is it 75, 50? Is it 50, 50? That kind of thing. Again, to make the point I stressed earlier, and I think John agrees with 100% with no modulation of my view. The issue is the fundamental picture will change when the Fed is able to downshift.
Yeah.
And the question, John, I think may think that's going to happen faster than the Fed does if it's got its eyes peeled on core inflation. We will see.
Well, I think the Fed has no interest in telling you that they could, right? That they could downshift. They don't, downshift are not words, and they have no incentive to even talk about that right now. So they're not going to indicate it. This is my sense, is that they are going to downshift.
Well, you know, I would say better to probably one would rather look like Volcker than Burns. And yeah. If you're gonna, it's better, probably better to hike now and get it out of the way before the economy goes down.
Agree. All right. Hey, thanks everyone. There's a lot to look at this week. We have we do have more data coming.
Yeah, we get the PCE price index, which is based off the CPI, so we have a decent sense of what that is. But you know, that's the Fed preferred price index.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll be paying attention to that, and then just really just how these markets are performing. I mean, you know, I think there is legitimate concern over how the bond markets are functioning. Yep. And I think that's the most important thing to pay attention to right now. As long as the markets are functioning well, I'm not really worried about where the movements are going and prices. Like they'll do what they have to do to respond to the economic situation that investors see in front of them. But as long as it's functioning well, to me, that's the most important piece.
And we might have probably the most important pivot coming next week is when the Steelers start the kid.
Don't get me that excited like that. You know, we'll talk. We'll talk by this time next week. We'll know for sure, and we can have a good debate on it. Guys, thanks for a great show, Mark Sobel. As always, thank you for making time for us. We really appreciate it. It's super valuable to me. Brendan Walsh, John Fagan, as always, and the great John Dick. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll catch you on the next MacroCast.
Thank you for listening to the MacroCast. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and share.